Michelle Duff delves into Jacinta Ardern's The Story Behind an Extraordinary Leader in a new book. Her beginnings from a small town, New Zealand, discovering a nose ring teen, fighting for equality and her own identity. She is perhaps one of the most enigmatic and outstanding leaders of the 21st century thus far. The book is called Jacinta Ardern. It's by Michelle Duff. Delighted to be joining me live on the line. Michelle Duff herself. Michelle, good morning to you.
Well, it's good evening for me, but good morning to you. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Whereabouts are you today?
I'm in New Zealand, in Auckland.
Marvellous, marvellous, marvellous. Tell me a little bit about then. She is a leader who seems to have sort of transcended politics and become, as we've moved into this sort of post-pandemic or during pandemic stage, she's really sort of become a world-leading figure. Not saying that New Zealand doesn't have them, but it's been quite an extraordinary rise.
Oh, it absolutely has. I mean, I don't think any of us could have predicted how fast, how swiftly she'd rise, you know, not only to being the leader of the Labour Party here in New Zealand, but to being the Prime Minister and, you know, globally recognised. And that has happened in an incredibly short amount of time. You know, there's no way it even looked, even a couple of months before the election here in New Zealand in 2017, it didn't look at all like her party would come close to winning. So, I mean, from there, it's just, yeah, her star has, you could definitely say that it has risen.
So explain to those, because, I mean, you know, we're based in Europe, we're based in Spain. Explain a little bit about the political landscape of New Zealand and why, because presumably it's been a mainly conservative background to the government situation over there. But just explain a little bit about the political landscape, please.
Yeah, sure. So I guess for the previous three terms, so the previous 9 years, we'd had a national government in power, which is a centre-right government, and that was led by a very charismatic leader, John Key. And he stepped down sort of before the election in September 2017, to be replaced by another leader who, and you know, they were polling on, I think, 47%, the National Party, and their main competitors, the Labour Party, which is centre-left, was polling on around about 24%, which is the worst that they'd, worst showing in about 20 years. So essentially, no one ever thought that Labour was going to get a shoo-in, and I guess within 2 months before election day, they saw that poll and obviously decided that something had to happen quickly. And so Jacinta Ardern, who was at that time deputy leader of the Labour Party, swiftly took the reins. And the next poll, which was about a month later, she was, you know, fairly neck and neck in terms of being the most, you know, the most popular and likely leader. Yeah.
And why, you know, why did she strike a chord? Why did people think it was time for such a change?
Look, I mean, I think that there was definitely a swelling of dissatisfaction with the current government. I mean, New Zealand, we had and actually still have a problem with homelessness. There's been a housing crisis, and I suppose in terms of education and health, the health systems, you know, there was a growing discontent and a recognition that nothing much had really been done in the past, you know, in the past 9 years. So there was that kind of that feeling. But I think, I don't know, I think her slogan was relentless positivity, and she sort of burst onto the scene with this fresh kind of attitude and fresh face. And I suppose, you know, in New Zealand, we do actually tend to vote out our governments after three terms. So, you know, I guess all of that combined, she's a very charismatic leader and an extremely good communicator. And I think all those things came together at the right time for her.
And she's not from one of the big cities in New Zealand. She's a small town girl. So explain a little bit about her background then, from where she actually came from.
Yeah, sure. So she's from a very small town called Murupara, which is kind of down country. It's, you know, there's not much there apart from, you know, a couple of bank machines, and, you know, it's a very low income community. And her dad was a police officer there. Her mum worked at the school lunch canteen, and she has often said that living there in that community gave her, you know, her first kind of stirrings of, you know, what it meant to be living in a world that was fair. You know, she saw kids going to school with no shoes and, you know, widespread poverty and that kind of thing. So, you know, she said that is something that kind of sparked her interest in social justice, I suppose.
And she's described in the blurb that I get as discovering a nose-ring teen fighting for equality. She's one of the few world leaders who had a piercing, I suppose.
Yeah, look, weren't we all fighting for our identity in the 90s? You know, I feel like, yeah, she went to a high school, you know, a mixed high school, and she was, you know, she was on the board, on the school board, and helped to, you know, to make it, get it ratified that girls would be allowed to wear shorts to school, because previously that hadn't been allowed. So she was definitely kind of fighting for, definitely gender was really high up on her list of things that she wanted to fight for. And, you know, she came from, yeah, a very religious background. Her family's Mormon. So she was, you know, quite devoutly religious until, I think, when she got to university and she lived with gay flatmates, and she realised that she just couldn't reconcile her, you know, what she'd been taught through the church with actually what she saw in front of her and what she believed.
Right. And that presumably going to university, if you like, it a little way sort of broadened her world outlook?
Yeah, I definitely think that would have, that certainly would have had something to do with it. And, you know, she was always involved with politics from quite a young age. She was volunteered with one of the local sort of Labour Party candidates, I think when she was about 16 or 17. So she certainly always was in tune, I suppose, to those kind of concerns.
And why such a rapid rise then through the ranks of the party? Did she show a particular sort of, obviously she must have shown a particular gift for politics, or is it more being a thing of her actual beliefs?
Look, honestly, before she took over as the leader, I honestly think that a lot of people would not have been able to tell you who she was. I mean, that would certainly be true. She had been in and around politics for a couple of decades, but, you know, I wouldn't say that she had really attracted much attention, apart from probably the thing, sadly, that she was most well known for was an electoral race in the Auckland Central seat, so our main city, and that was against another young woman, political candidate from the National Party, Nikki Kaye, and that was very quickly dubbed the Battle of the Babes, you know, because we had two attractive young women both vying for the same seat. And so, you know, that was what I think is horrendously sexist coverage. But, you know, obviously for both of them, it put them on the national stage so that people knew who she was because of that.
She became Prime Minister, and then, if you like, events have unfolded. And it's the way that she has reacted to the events that have marked her out. I mean, the most horrendous, obviously, was last year and the mosque attack, and the way that she took decisive action, and that's perhaps been the mark of her premierships thus far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the time that she's been Prime Minister, she's been faced with an, you know, unprecedented set of events, really, to have to contend with. And March 15, you know, when two mosques, the Al Noor and Linwood mosques in Christchurch, were attacked by a white supremacist gunman who gunned down 51 New Zealanders in prayer, you know, at prayer. It was a horrendous time. And, you know, it could have, I don't think, as a nation, you know, we have not had that kind of terrorist attack in New Zealand. And, you know, those kind of far-right ideologies, that kind of those kind of politics. You know, although obviously we know that they're there on a global stage, we haven't really had to contend with them too much in New Zealand. So, you know, I guess that moment for her, it could have been one to, you know, to react with anger or talk about retribution, you know, but instead she chose to unite. And she did that through saying, you know, they are us, you know, those Muslim New Zealanders are us, they're all of us. And I think that the way that she reacted, which, you know, she often talks about acting with kindness and how you can bring kindness into politics. And I think that really set the tone for the way that we as a nation sort of responded to that. And it also, you know, as well as kind of condemning his beliefs, it placed them as separate to us. And, you know, I think that was what, you know, we responded really well to that. And obviously, you know, it touched the rest of the world too, by the sounds of things.
I mean, the thing is, from a European point of view, and, you know, we as a British person, we have had terror attacks. You know, we have had bombings over the years, and obviously in the States, it's almost, unfortunately, it's almost a monthly occurrence. But how big an impact on New Zealand did something like that have?
Look, I actually don't think I can express this well enough. You know, there's 5 million of us here, and, you know, it's the whole 6 degrees of separation thing. You know someone who knows someone else. Everyone is connected in some way. And it felt like, I don't know, you know these things happen in the world, and you know that this horrific racism and these awful acts, that they exist, but you just, I don't know, you know, I guess no one thought it would happen here. And so when it did, it was, you know, I felt sick, you know. It was just, it was horrific, and it felt personal somehow. And also, you know, I guess it has given us as New Zealanders a chance to kind of examine how, you know, every one of us is actually part of this global landscape, and that when it comes to speaking out against these horrific beliefs, then we all have a responsibility to do that, you know? Yeah, sorry, I might have gone off track.
No, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. I just wanted to find out how the psych was, and then you answered that really, really well. What was the, and also the thing was, didn't she immediately take action against the gun laws as well? And then that was, rather than sort of flanneling or saying, well, look at that, you know, when the time is right, she was straight in there and saying, right, you know, those are off the table now.
Yeah, well, this is the interesting thing, because a lot of her critics would say that she's all, she's no substance, you know, that she's a lot of talk, and that she doesn't, you know, get things done. But, you know, I think that we can see that after the terror attack, how she swiftly saw that there was a need to act while the nation was, I guess, shocked and appalled by what we'd seen. And so, yeah, I mean, I think she turned around and banned those semi-automatic rifles, and in a matter of days, you know, that was something that was done very swiftly.
And she also acted swiftly with another crisis, which is the one that we are currently still in the throes of course, coronavirus, the pandemic. And the way that New Zealand acted was decisive and tough, but has seen positive results.
Yeah, you know, it almost feels now as if we're living in some kind of alternate universe where the rest of the world is grappling, you know, I mean, now, apart from, obviously, we're in somewhat of an economic crisis like everyone else, in terms of being able to live our daily lives and, you know, go out and see our friends and everything else, where, you know, I don't think we've had an active, there's been no community transmission for 73 days, I think. And yeah, I mean, I think we had our first case at the end of February, and within a month we were in a full lockdown for, you know, probably four to 6 weeks was where our movements were very restricted. And, you know, she very swiftly decided on that elimination strategy, I think they call it. And, you know, we've had 22 deaths, and had we followed the example of, I guess, somewhere like Sweden, we could have had, you know, 2,500 if had we gone with something like that. So it's just, yeah, I mean, I think she had the support of, I think 90% of the country had supported that move to go into lockdown, and yeah, I think a large number continue to support that.
And not only did she do all that, but there's also a meme being going around social media that she did this, she did that, and she did all of that whilst having a baby on her arm at the same time, because she is, I believe, she's only the second world leader to have a child whilst in office, I believe.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, yeah, she's the second behind Benazir Bhutto of Pakistan, and the first to ever take maternity leave. So she took maternity leave 6 weeks, I believe, and her partner, Clark Gayford, stayed at home as the primary caregiver to their daughter. So, I mean, yeah, certainly being pregnant while in office and then, you know, running the country while, you know, there are a lot of firsts, you know. She was the youngest member of parliament as well in New Zealand when she was kind of signed in 2008. So certainly, yeah, there's been a lot of barriers that she's broken down. And I think definitely within New Zealand, you know, a lot of the people that I spoke to for my book, particularly young women and men actually, found the way that she's done that and sort of done it in a way that, you know, she kind of makes it seem unremarkable that she would be able to have a family and run the country as, you know, as it should be. You know, a lot of these people are finding it, really inspirational.
Is that perhaps the thing that attracts people to Jacinda Ardern, is the fact that if you think New Zealand as an outsider, you think of a couple of bits and pieces, and you tend to think it's a pretty male-dominated society. You think the rugby, you think the Maori. And what's remarkable about her is that she hasn't done it in a firebrand kind of way, but this is perhaps a new New Zealand, if you like, if that doesn't sound like too many words at once. And she's, you know, she's setting the tone for a country that is embracing the 21st century.
Look, I would love to agree with you wholeheartedly on that, but, you know, I don't think we can be blind to the fact that we still live in, you know, we still live in a patriarchal society. We still have problems with racism in New Zealand. It's definitely not, you know, I see how it's tempting to look at us and sort of think, oh, look, you know, look at what they've achieved and what's going on there and, you know, everything's all rosy. But, you know, in actual fact, what she has achieved has been phenomenal, and certainly she's aspirational, but, you know, there are still problems in New Zealand that have not been addressed. You know, we do still have a housing crisis. I think at last count about 18,000 people were still on a waiting list for public housing. You know, there are still, you know, we have had, you know, systemic racism in our health system her government so far hasn't addressed. So actually, you know, and I think it also should be remembered that there were a significant proportion of the country that did not vote for her and who don't agree with her politics. So, you know, it's not, you know, I think she will, you know, after her handling of the coronavirus, I think it would be unlikely for her to be beaten in this upcoming election, but, you know, it's not out of range, you know.
So when you come to writing a book about, I mean, who did you speak to? Who did you talk about? You know, who did you bring into the narrative?
Yeah, so I mean, she unfortunately was not ready to be interviewed yet. I think she thought it was a little bit early for a biography. So I just wanted to investigate what basically the Jacinda Ardern phenomenon, you know, how did she manage to win an election in such a short space of time? And then what was it about her politics and her personality that made her, I suppose, so charismatic? You know, we called it Jacinda Mania at the time of the, of the election campaign and all that. So, and I also wanted to look at, you know, what kind of mark she would leave and what it really means for gender equality and that sort of thing. So I talked to, you know, people that were close to her, that grew up with her, people that she worked with through the years, and also, I suppose, those who were impacted and have been impacted by what she's done.
And is she going to, I mean, she's certainly been a remarkable leader. She's been a remarkable leader during interesting times, as the Chinese would say. But do you think there is going to be an impact on New Zealand, or do you think it's too early to say, in her tenure?
Well, it depends what you're looking at, because I think she's already had an impact in terms of, you know, being a role model for so many and achieving so much while she's been in office. As a role model, she's achieved a lot while she's been in office. In terms of actually, has she reduced child poverty, as she has always talked about, you know, being a main thing for her, and, you know, will we reduce, you know, people on homelessness and that kind of thing? I think it just remains to be seen. You know, I think she'd like to say that this is a transformational government, but, you know, she's in a coalition at the moment, so she's kind of got a couple of handbrakes on some of the things that she might want to do. So I think that will only become clear, you know, if they win the next election, then they've got another 3 years, then we might see some, you know, real inroads in some of the things that I suppose, that I think that we'd like to see done.
The book is called Jacinda Ardern, The Story Behind an Extraordinary Leader. It's out now. It's by Michelle Duff. Michelle, if people want to find out more about you or about the book, is there social media? Is there a website? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm actually currently on maternity leave. So I'm not actually, usually I am employed as a national correspondent for a website called Stuff.
Right.
Which is It's the biggest news website in New Zealand. It's called Stuff, just STUFF.
Yeah, I'm aware of that one. I've checked it several times.
You know, okay, so stuff.co.nz. If you go there, there's an author profile, which, you know, you can see all the work that I'm doing. Otherwise, I'm on Twitter @Michelle_Duff.
And I was going to say, what are you up to next? But if you're on maternity leave, presumably you've got your hands pretty full at the moment then.
Well, look, I've got a few more months on, just relaxing around the house with a 9-month-old, you know,
right.
and then I'll get back into it. So yeah, I've got a few things that I've got on the go or looking forward to getting back into it. But yeah, you'll have to wait till September.
Well, this book is called Jacinda Ardern, The Story Behind an Extraordinary Leader. It's by Michelle Duff. Go out and get it. Michelle, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.